Hoosiers down three as we've reached the top of the ninth. They have three outs to work with. They need three runs. Tibbetts hard through the middle. That'll get through for a base hit. It's one hard on the right field line. That'll get down for a base hit. It's low. Four pitch walk. Jake Stadler. Fastball high. Walks a run in. Ground to one. Right back at the pitcher's Duvall. That's going to go into foul territory. Everybody's safe. Run scores. Purdue's one out away from getting out of the bases loaded jam. 3-1 low. He's walked. The Hoosiers have tied it on a bases loaded RBI walk for Nick Mitchell. Ground ball. Slow grounder. Savoie lost it off his glove. Sorney's going to get to first. He's safe. Run comes around. Indiana leads. Ogle taking his time. We'll set. Fastball high in the air, sent deep to left center. Carter Matheson's at the track, at the wall, in front of the wall. He makes the play. Indiana takes the series in West Lafayette.
Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, May 6th, 2024. I am Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney and Cassidy Palmer. The Indiana University baseball team accomplished something that has eluded the program since 2002. They won a weekend series in West Lafayette. It sure wasn't easy for the Hoosiers. Indiana made four errors and two costly base running mistakes on the way to a 7-4 Friday night defeat. On Saturday and Sunday, the Hoosiers failed to score at all in the first six innings of either game. On Saturday, Purdue starter Luke Wagner was excellent, giving up only one hit and facing the minimum, thanks to a double play through six innings. The Hoosiers ran him after two hits in the seventh and scored seven in that inning, including a Carter Matheson three-run blast. The pitching duo of Connor Foley and Ty Bothwell were back and held Purdue to just two runs on the day as the Hoosiers ran away with the game 10-2. On Sunday, the Hoosiers again scored in only the seventh and ninth innings, but it was much closer. Indiana was crushing the ball all day, but couldn't seem to find outfield grass. Brock Tibbetts and Carter Matheson finally broke through with back-to-back hits in the ninth, opening the floodgates of three walks and an infield hit and error to take the lead. Redshirt freshman Jacob Vogel pitched the final 4.0 scoreless innings to seal the win. Cass, what are your thoughts on this great weekend?
Yeah, thank you, Carl. What really stood out to me, besides the chaos of that ninth inning on Sunday, the thing that really stood out to me was very much the departure from the conference season pitching norms for Indiana. By and large, when teams have put up runs, and particularly lots of runs, those have come in the first three innings, the second three innings, or the first six innings. And we really didn't see that much, especially looking at earned runs, taking out those unearned runs. There were a few of those, and that's never what you want to see in a big rivalry game like this. But I was particularly interested in, given how close the games were for the majority of the games, how poised the Hoosier pitchers truly looked. They were in control, even though they were close games and their offense wasn't giving them anything early on. That's in the past this season been a recipe for, ooh, we're going to have some runs happen, we're going to have some snowball innings. And that was not the case this weekend. In total, the Hoosier pitchers threw 21 innings where the score was plus or minus two, where the score was within two runs either direction. And they gave up a total of nine earned runs. And some in there was a little fun. There were a few. I remember there was a bunt play that, yeah, probably should have been an out. it was not an error. It got credited as a hit, but yeah, probably should have been an error. It was a misplay regardless. So a little bit of wonkiness there, but really focusing on those first three innings and second three innings. All of the innings in that stretch were within that plus or minus two run margin. The Hoosiers gave up a total across the three games of just three earned runs in the first three innings and three earned runs in the second three innings. That is not the pitching staff that we've seen as frequently since the start of conference play. And so seeing that turn back around was huge. And the only way we get to that crazy ninth inning on Sunday is because the pitching staff didn't give up in those first innings and middle innings. Looking at even batting average, they were giving up some hits here and there, but in the first three innings, Purdue only hit 235 off Hoosier pitchers. In the second three innings, hit 242. So for a combined in the first six innings, hit 239. This is a legit Purdue offense. This Purdue team can hit. So to see the pitching staff stay poised when their offense wasn't necessarily helping them out in that early part of the game, and to just keep battling, that's what the pitchers did all weekend. They battled. It wasn't always pretty, but they got the job done. And if this team can do that, they can beat just about anybody if they can keep battling in those early innings. So that was the thing that really, really stood out to me on the weekend, besides just the fun of it. So Chris, you've got some hardware to hand out on this happy weekend.
Absolutely. It is a happy one. Great job, Carl, with the intro, man. That was cool hearing Ben's call. Yes. For those who are listening and not watching, the probability by each at-bat is on the screen, and it just drops. It was amazing. There was like 99% chance that these dopes were going to beat us, and then they didn't do it because they choked it away. And to watch it just drop, 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 if you're just a listener, which I know we have a lot of just listeners on the pod, if there's ever a week you want to watch the intro on YouTube, this is the one. Let me tell you. It was a really nice graphic. I don't know how you call it, edit. Or Carl knows what it's called, but it was really well done job by Carl. It was really cool to watch it and hear Ben's radio call as it was happening. I mean, just fires you up. Not like we already aren't fired up. The game was only yesterday. Very rare we do a pod on a Monday, but
we were a little excited.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's just the way it goes. Now, I know I'm supposed to give out awards, so I just wanted to go over a few awards that might share, you know, with these red belts. And maybe if you guys can catch on to what I'm doing, feel free to jump in. Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Tiger Woods won the Masters. Pete Sampras won the U.S. Open. Giselle and Leo were dating. Bennifer, the first time was happening. The Best New Artist Award, Alicia Keys. Best Male Actor of the Year, Denzel Washington, for one of my favorite films, Training Day.
2002, I think.
2002, Carl! You got it!
How about the fact that only nine of the current Hoosiers were even born yet?
Unbelievable. 2002. This hasn't happened since A Beautiful Mind was the picture of the year. This hasn't happened since Pete Sampras won the U.S. Open there in 02. All these things. Nora Jones, album of the year, Come Away With Me, for those of you who are familiar with Nora Jones. None of this has happened since 2002. Now, a lot of it has to do with scheduling, right? Because we weren't playing them every year. Like Schwarber and the boys, they had the series at the BART. They didn't get one over there. And from what I remember, we smoked the hell out of them at the BART and drew about 4,000 people to every game. So their little happy 9,000 people this weekend tweet. We did that in like a game and a half. when we were rolling. So let's just forget that. But anyway, for the first time since 2002, the Hoosiers go in and sweep the Boilermakers in their stadium. It was a beautiful, not sweep, but take the series in their stadium. It was a beautiful thing. Those were all awards. So we do have some other awards to give out as far as the red belts. And I remember Cass in the group chat was like, who are you going to give the pitcher to? Because there was a lot of really good pitching. And she went over it in her piece there about, you know, how good the pitching was. I mean, we took the lead in the first inning on Friday. I remember it was 1-0. I was happy. We didn't take the lead again until the seventh inning on Saturday. Had it for a couple innings, won. Then we didn't have the lead again until the, like, what, the ninth, whatever the hell it was, on Sunday. So I believe Hoosier pitchers walked up to that mound 5 times in 27 innings with the lead and still were able to do what they had to do. It was just incredible. And I mean, as a Met fan, I mean, I was kind of waiting for the bottom to fall out. I'm not going to lie. Like, it was just too good, right? Like, this can't be happening again. Like, they couldn't have choked another one away, but they did. And Jacob Vogel going out back out there for the ninth inning. Balls, okay? I don't know how he walks around when I'm that big. Like, I don't get it. Because the way he pulled that off, I don't know. He was falling off the mound. Like, but he still got it done. Vogel's a beast. He threw 4 innings, gave up 2 hits, no runs, a walk, and a K. And I thought at the end of the game, and again, I'm not a Yankee fan, but for those of you who remember when the guy hit the home run off Wakefield to end the, what was it, the 0-3 ALCS, and Mariano just kind of dove on the mound. He was exhausted. I thought Vogel was going to do that. I didn't know if he was going to make it back on the bus. Amazing. Jacob Vogel gets the Joey Donato red belt. Well-earned. Okay. But again, lots of other good ones, right? Ty doing his thing. There was plenty of great pitching in this. I mean, it's just Drew Burr again.
Even Foley in his first outing back.
Coming off of that pitcher for 2 weeks, right?
Right.
Well, 3 total if you add up all the days.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was rock star stuff up and down the pitching. You know, the arms race was solid. So for defensively, I'm going to go for a guy who I don't know if they really expected him to take the field this week. You know, he had played 149 straight games as a Hoosier, and then he gets hurt, right? I may or may not know that we had a video kind of put together, a really cool piece for 150th game that we never got to show for 150 straight, right? You know, and he didn't want to do any of this Fugazi stuff where you just kind of go out and just take the field and then come off. No, man, Brock wasn't about that. Brock said, I'm hurt. I'm not going to play. I'm going to come back when I can play. And I'm going to play the field. And he played first base. And straight off the bat, Friday, scoop, saving errors, doing all this thing. It was really, really a great job by Brock. It was great to see him out there. So he's going to get the Tony Butler. And it really is fitting that Tony Butler is this award name. Because Tony was such a leader. And Brock put his leader cards and just pushed them all in this weekend. I really feel like he did. I don't think he had to play the field. I think he certainly could have just DH'd. But I think, you know what? He knew he'd help the team more on the field and probably didn't care what the coaches had to say. He said, I'm going out there. I'm doing it anyway. Again, I don't know that as a fact. But I don't know. I think that's – I could see Brock doing that. So he gets the defensive red belt. Offensively, bunch of choices, especially if you want to think about clutch, right? If you want to think about, you know, backs against the wall, right? Backs against the wall, what are we going to do? You know, we're down by 3 and the first guy gets out. You know, everybody says that first batter when you're down by a few runs is key, right? Well, our first guy got out. But our boys didn't care, right? Brock base hit, Carter base hit, you know? And then in the seventh inning, all those, what, 5 two-out hits? That's crazy. Who gets 5 two-out hits? We don't usually. We give them up a couple times on the midweek, but we usually don't give them. We usually don't get them. But Carter Matheson's going to get it. All right, I know Brock tied it. I know he did. He did tie that game 2-2. But Carter Matheson said, I'm giving us some room. And he hit that three-run bomb on Saturday. And he was part of that two hits to start the ninth inning rally. Okay? Everybody talks about it. You know, this team runs around Pine, Matheson, and Brock. And Pine's not getting the belt this week. But what did he do on Friday? Two doubles and a hit. Right? He was part of that rally on Saturday. I really like how it was these three, you know, it was them. This weekend was them. I know it was DT too, and I know it was the pitching, but to see Brock and Carter and Pine back on the field together doing their thing with Brock back from the injury, come on, this is their team. This is their year, right? Anybody, flip around Twitter a little bit. You'll see Pine grabbing that Indiana on his chest. You'll see Brock finding the camera, doing the championship belt. I mean, these guys want this. You know what I mean? And to have all three of them be a big part of this weekend. And to think we pulled this off. I mean, it was amazing. Yeah, did they choke it away? Sure. But if a team's going to choke something away, then the other team has to be able to make it happen, right? Mm-hmm. They have this thing called the anatomy of a choke or the anatomy of a winning streak. Well, it takes more than one team to do it. And we made sure it happened. So our red belts this week are going to be Carter, Jacob, and Brock. I'm guessing that, Carl, I kick it to you for some RPI update.
Well, and before we kick it to Carl, I do want to, with just 2 weeks left, I do want to give a tally update on the red belts.
Oh, because, please do, please.
Because with just 2 weeks left,
yes,
all three of them are completely up for grabs still.
Ooh.
On the pitching red belt side, we've got Bothwell with 4, Foley with 3, Burr with 2, and then Kraft, Phillips, and Vogel each have 1.
So they're out.
And they're out to win it all. But Burr and Foley could both either tie or take the lead.
So it's Ty, Foley, and Burr going for it.
Yep. Offense, just everybody.
Oh.
We've got Taylor, Cerny, and Oliver with 2. And we have Tibbett, Pine, Shepherd. I guess he's technically not really in it anymore. Mitchell, Brinchevsky, and Matheson.
Shepherd could come back for Michigan.
He could. He could. And so he is. That's why I said he's not fully in the running as much as
he is. He could. He could come back for Michigan.
Yes. But so all of those guys each have 1.
So nobody has 3.
Nobody has 3. So that one is fully up for grabs. It could be just about anybody in that lineup.
Ooh.
On the defensive side, we've got Pine with 3, Cerny, Matheson, and Brinchevsky with 2, and Taylor, Stadler, and Tibbetts each with 1. So again, anybody could at least tie for first.
So like it
is still wide open for these red belts. I've
Has
never seen
this
it
many
here.
People alive this late.
Right. No, especially on the offensive side. I don't think I've ever seen it where literally like the entire lineup just about is in the running.
Yeah, because like Gorski would get a whole bunch, or Lloyd would get a whole bunch. Yeah.
So I did want to give that update as we're coming to the end of the regular season.
Good call, Cass. I like it. I wrote them all down. I'll post them up and we'll see who's still alive.
Okay. So, Carl, we're kicking it to you as about as important a time for RPI as there is in the season.
Yes. So Indiana's RPI, I think the last reading we took was the 63rd. The needs report from Boyd's World has gotten a little tougher. I haven't really dug in, but I'm assuming that the strength of schedule's gotten a little worse just by some teams that were not expected to lose that have Coastal Carolina.
That was like the greatest win we had, and now they can't win.
So Boyd's World is now saying to get to top 45, IU needs to now go 8-1 down the stretch. Now, before anybody panics, it's looking more and more from just seeing the various experts talk that Indiana is looking really good from a metrics piece, resume wise, and especially from the eye test. And you look at, I mean, Look at the True Road series. What True Road series has Indiana lost?
Crickets.
That's right. Indiana has not lost a True Road series yet this year.
No.
Wow. And there's only one left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a big one.
It's a big one.
That is a
Probably
huge one.
the most difficult of the
Yeah.
true roads.
Agreed.
But this team's battle tested. This team, and the thing, this is it. This team has already proven they can win on the road. They can win against good teams. The key things that the committee looks for outside of just the straight RPI rank are there. So what needs to happen then is get that RPI closer to 45. Doesn't have to hit our 45, but get closer to 45 and maintain those metrics. Now the other thing is none of this happens in a vacuum, and teams will move in the ranks. So you kind of want to make some decisions about, who to root against nationally. So if you're looking for who to root against nationally, these are some teams might want to chalk up, and I'll probably get this written up too. I'll give you their RPI rank, and then a key statistic as to why they're in trouble. So first, the teams that are in the top 45 that could get bounced. Number 24, Florida, is 10-14 in the SEC, and they're really close to not even qualifying with a record that's below 500 total. Essentially, you can get away in the SEC with having an under 500 record, but you're going to have to still get really close to it. 14-16 might be okay. 13-17 if you go to Hoover and do some damage in Hoover. But, 12 wins only in the SEC ain't going to cut it. And Florida is dangerously close to being in that situation. Ole Miss is really close to that at 9-15, and they're 25th in the RPI. Postal now at 32. While we would for Indiana's metrics would like to see. Now the good news is Coastal is still a Q1 win, even if they fall all the way to 60th in the RPI. So I guess it's kind of like as close to 60 without
Without
reaching
going
it
over.
would be nice. They're 11-13 in the Sun Belt. I'll tell you this, if they end up underwater in the Sun Belt, they're out. Doesn't matter what the RPI is. Number 35, Maryland at 10-11 in the Big Ten. Maryland, again, I don't think, yes, Big Ten is Power Five and number four overall RPI conference, the Big Ten's ever been, at least since I've been tracking. But I don't think the committee is gonna let a team that's sub 500 in the Big Ten into this tournament. So
Wait, so you're
Maryland.
saying we have to root against Maryland? I don't know if we could do
Yeah.
that, Carl.
Tough ask.
it. Let's go.
UConn is 2-9 against quadrant one teams, so that makes them very bumpable. They're 43 in the RPI, so the farther down they go, the better. Louisiana Tech is 3-5 against quad one, not as bad, but they are at 45. Okay, so now I'm going to list some teams that Indiana will be competing with in order to bump these other teams. So number one, Indiana's got to win games to get the RPI up. But number 46, Georgia Tech, is 12-12 in the ACC, which is a pretty good mark in the ACC, and they're 6-9 quad one. So solid RPI. Their metrics are okay. 48, Oregon is 4-4 against quad one. Number 51, Texas, is 8-7 against quad one, and they are on a tear lately.
What
Another
are we
big
quad one again?
5-6 right now.
5-6.
Now you're talking about rooting for a team. Purdue is at 69. If Purdue can get into the top
Nice.
60,
60.
that will increase. So you kind of want to root for
Root
Purdue
for
from now on
Purdue.
in order to get that up.
No.
Utah, number 55 in the RPI, is 4-1 against quad one teams. They've also been doing really well out of the Pac-12 lately. Number 57, Louisville, 7-10 against quad one. And they've been doing well lately in the ACC.
That's another one that's going to be rough to root against, Carl.
Well, the good news is Indiana can take care of that one on their own,
Dallas.
as we'll hear about later. Number 60, Creighton, is 4-5 against quad one teams.
They
So
told
those are
Nebraska, though. They beat Nebraska like four times. It's amazing.
So those are the teams, at least right now. Again, a week from now, this could look completely different, and I will start putting together some articles that will specify a little bit of scoreboard watching that you can do for what is likely to help or hurt Indiana from an RPI perspective.
And out of curiosity, having looked at the forecast for tomorrow, if that game cannot be played, how does that change our needs?
I don't think it will
As
change it
far.
much. It's
Okay.
a home game, so losing a home game isn't awful. And I
Not
would
playing
say,
home game.
what?
No, you're
I
saying
mean,
losing home. You mean
not
not
as
playing it.
yet, not playing it. Yeah, I mean, losing
Not
that on the
losing the game.
schedule, losing the game on the schedule. But
Yep.
yeah, so and I think overall, you look at the metrics, they're pretty well awash with the rest of the schedule.
Okay.
So. Yeah, I think it basically, yeah, just essentially, yeah, I don't think it's going to bump it, especially given that they just tilted to 8-1. If it had to go to 7-1, I don't think that would like make it go to 8-0, needing
Okay.
for 45.
That's kind of what I was
Yeah,
looking.
that's my educated
Thinking.
guess at this point. I have
Yeah.
not actually drawn out the
Right.
numbers to say for sure that's the
Right.
case.
It just looks like it's storms all day, so
Yeah, because the other thing is, I don't think Cincinnati. What's Cincinnati's overall record? I haven't. I just forgot that. Let me pull that up. I've got that pulled here.
I was gonna say I've got it somewhere.
Let me go back one here because I'm on their
Whatever
stats right
role.
now. They are 27-21. So yeah, I don't think this is going to hurt. I don't think canceling this game would hurt. I don't think it would help, but I don't think it would hurt. I think it'd be pretty much a wash.
Okay. Not saying that it is going to be canceled, but when I see the little lightning bolts this close to game day, I get a little more concerned.
So obviously the Big Ten race. Now, I like to always plug this because I do some work on it. If you go to iubase.com and click on Big Ten standings, this is a Big Ten standing list you will not get anywhere else. Not at Warren Nolan, not from the Big Ten, not from the things that from the graphics that the Big Ten puts out. They don't have these in the right order. The ones on iubase.com are in the correct order. And I explain in the section above what the tiebreakers are. And these are the tiebreakers for the Big Ten tournament. It also specifies, though, that the conference championship, so whichever teams get the trophy at the end of the regular season, there is no tiebreaker for that. So that can get split among multiple teams if teams are sharing the same winning percentage at the end of the season. So right now, Illinois is in sole possession of first place at 13-5, followed by Indiana at number 2, Purdue at number 3, Nebraska at number 4, all with a 12-6 record, 667 winning percentage. The reason that Indiana is on top right now is because Indiana and Purdue each have a 3-0 record against Rutgers, while Nebraska is 1-2, and that's the only team that's common to all three teams. So then, what happens though, since Indiana and Purdue are tied, Nebraska gets slotted into 4, and then there is a two-way tiebreaker between Indiana and Purdue, which is head-to-head. We just solved that one yesterday. So Indiana gets the nod right now, at least. Fifth place is Iowa at 13-8. Iowa only has 3 games left in the Big Ten, and they're a game and a half back. Next is Michigan at 11-7. 2 games back. Michigan State is the only 500 team at 9-9. They're 4 games back. So essentially, Michigan State is competing closely with Maryland for that 7-8 spot. They're in 7-8 right now. Maryland is 10-11 at 476, 4.5 games back. The teams that are currently out of the running but still have a shot at getting into the Big Ten tournament, because you got to be in the top 8 to get into the Big Ten tournament. Ohio State is just on the outside looking in, 8-10. They are 5 games back. So they're only a half game back of Maryland right now. Ohio State still has two series left to play. But Ohio State is mathematically still in the Big Ten title race, but not realistically. Actually, I think they would, the best they could do is tie, and I think there's probably a scenario in which they could not possibly win, but that would be way too complicated and time-consuming for me to calculate. There are four teams that are completely eliminated from the Big Ten title race. That's Minnesota at 7-11, Penn State at 7-11, and Rutgers at 4-14, which is just nuts, especially given they're a 64 RPI. Just absolutely nuts. Northwestern is the only team that has been eliminated from the Big Ten tournament. Northwestern will not be going to Omaha. They are sitting in dead last at 2-16 in the league. But one thing that's of note here, though, is the worst RPI team in the Big Ten right now is Penn State at 152. I can't remember a time when there wasn't a 200-plus team in the Big Ten, and 152 is the worst. Northwestern is at 135. Minnesota is at 120. And this is really the reason that the Big Ten is the number four RPI team in the country, is that even the bottom tier teams did pretty well out of conference and have respectable RPI rates that are in the top half of the country. So that's a huge step forward for the league. It's just the league has been beating up on itself, and only Nebraska has really stood out. Although it's Maryland's close, but their league record has made that troubling for them. So obviously, the thing that's really nuts about this, and we'll cover it in the Big Ten Pick'em, is that the top teams are all going to be playing each other. So there's it's all going to be settled on the field here in the next 2 weeks. And the big piece of that is Indiana traveling to Lincoln. Chris, what can you tell us about Nebraska?
Well, before the Red Belts, we went back, what, 22 years to 2002? We'll go back 10 years before we do this preview. A lot of people might not, know the history. Like, 10 years is a long time ago. If you've just gotten into Indiana baseball 5 years ago, if you've just gotten into Indiana baseball 2 years ago, because a guy started playing for the team, or, 10 years ago in 2014, IU and Nebraska dominant during the regular season, but never played each other. Okay. They both go into the Big Ten tournament. Okay. It's played in Omaha, as we know. It was then also. Indiana was ranked number 9 in the country. Nebraska was ranked number 20 in the country. And they met in the final. And they both had never lost in the tournament. So they face each other in the final in Omaha. 19,965 people were there that day. Not that many IU fans were there. Let's just put it that way. Nebraska's fans showed out. Okay, they had the whole damn place. It started off good for IU. 3-0 went up. Nebraska came back and tied at 3-3. Then Schwarber decided to hit a bomb. Okay, when I say a bomb, nobody was hitting home runs in this place then. This guy crushed it in the fifth inning. And IU never looked back and won 8-3 and won the title. And you know what they did when they won the game? They shook hands like they had won a game in May at the BART on a Tuesday. Straight up, they did. No dog pile, no crazy celebration. Because the year before, they'd been to Omaha for real. So they expected to come back. There was no throw to hats, the dog pile, the whole bit. They were like, yep, we were supposed to win. Even though there was 19,000 people rooting against them in the game. I'll never forget that. It was a great game. It really was. But the way the team acted as we won the game, it was just like, meh, shake hands, Tuesday night, maybe early May. It wasn't quite March. They were happy. It wasn't March. It was like May, like a midweek in May. And they got on the plane and they came back. And they expected to dogpile at the BART in the Supers against whoever, and then go to Omaha. It didn't play out that way. But, that's a little IU Nebraska history. 10 years ago, played at that stadium. Now, this game isn't going to be played in that stadium because Nebraska's games are played in Lincoln. They're played at Hawks Field in Haymarket Park, which is also the same stadium where the Lincoln Salt Dogs play from the Independent Baseball League. It holds 8,500 people. It's got 4,500 seats, 4,000 standing room only. It's got a second deck. I mean, this is a nice joint. I've never been there, but I've seen games there, and I've seen on TV. Very nice stadium. I really wish I was going to be jealous. Other people are at these games, and these games are being held, Friday night at 7 Eastern. Okay, obviously, you got the time change. So if you see 6, it's probably because it's on Nebraska time. So Friday at 7, Saturday at 7, and Sunday at 1. All right, Friday's on the streamer on the Plus. Saturday and Sunday are on BTN. All right, Saturday is Nebraska's senior day. So, they might not start right at 7. They might do some, senior festivities that might start a little bit late. And then Sunday is a 1 o'clock Eastern time on BTN. So those are your times. That's where it's at. There's a little history. Now let's talk about this actual Nebraska team. Okay. They're 30-16. They're 16-6 at home. The last series they played was at Minnesota. They won the first two. They won 10-7, 7-3. And then they lost Sunday to Minnesota just yesterday, 6-2. So Minnesota never gets swept. They never win a series, but they never get swept, these Gophers. And maybe that's why the RPI is better than it normally is. But yeah, so that was the last three. Common opponents for Nebraska and IU. Nebraska beat Baylor 4-1 at a neutral game. It was like one of those kind of like the things that we played at minor league ballpark with a bunch of different teams. So they beat Baylor 4-1. They lost 2 out of 3 to Rutgers in New Jersey. They won 2 out of 3 against Maryland at home, and then they won 2 out of 3 at Minnesota just recently. So that's an idea of how they are as a team. Now, for their pitches, Friday, we know who's pitching. There will be no TBA. Okay. His name is Brett Sears. He's a right-hander. He's 6 foot, he's 205 pounds. This guy's story is super unique. I was texting Carl about it as I was looking into it. He spent 2 years at Western Illinois. He then goes to Iowa Central, which is like a JUCO factory, then comes to Nebraska and spends a year in relief last year and only becomes a starter this year. And they put him right into the Friday night starter role. He's had 13 starts. The team is 12-1, and he is 7-0. I don't understand it. That's the story of that guy that I just told you. Shouldn't have just rolled into Friday night in the Big Ten and did that, but he did. So he's 7-0. Batting average against is minuscule. Okay, his WHIP is 0.84. It's one of the best in the nation. 0.84 WHIP. It's crazy. He's got 77 strikeouts in 78 innings. He's thrown a complete game two-hit shutout against Ohio State. The team is 12-1 when he pitches, for the season. So this isn't going to be easy. I wish I could tell you he's overpowering, he's deceptive, and really tricky. But all three are wrong, but he still wins. So you know what? Those are the guys. They throw. Maybe they're just pitchers, right? They make it happen. But we got to figure out a way to let Brett Sears pick up his first loss on Friday night, or at least outlast him. Whatever this joke, guy's doing, outlast him. Get to the pen. Maybe be down 3 in the ninth, and just beat him anyway. It works against Purdue. Maybe it'll work against everybody.
My heart can't take much more of that.
Well, but I'm saying if it works, though, you take it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's their Friday guy. Really, I don't know how this guy's doing it, and it's a great story. This kid, Brett Sears, man, I'm telling you. I was looking this up. I thought I was getting pranked. I was like looking behind me, like, did somebody mess with my computer or something? But hey, this is his story, and this is what he's doing. So it is legit. Saturday, Mason McConaughey. All right, all right. He's a sophomore right-handed pitcher. He's 6'3, 225 pounds. He's 6'3. He's got a 3.19 ERA. He got 55 Ks in 48 innings. His batting average against is 253. He's got only got 16 walks up against those 55 Ks, which I thought was impressive. So we'll see what we can do against Mason. Now, these two have pitched basically every Friday and Saturday. And now this guy, this Sunday guy, has pitched all the Sundays, but there's a caveat to that. But I'll tell you what the Sunday guy is. So we got my man Will Walsh. I like that. M made me think of Brandon and Brenda Walsh out of Minnesota. Willie Walsh, 4-4, a 5.36 ERA. It's been this Sunday guy. But then there's this other guy who had 6 relief appearances. His first start was last Wednesday against Kansas State. His name is Jackson Brockett. So he's been throwing relief a lot. They say, all right, let's start this guy against Kansas State. He throws a no-hitter. A no-hitter with 12 strikeouts. The 12th strikeout is the 27th out. It was pretty wild. So I'm going to guess that Jackson Brockett is going to pitch Sunday. I could be wrong. But how the hell do you not throw this guy after he just threw a no-hitter? You know, they've obviously lengthened him out. He threw over 100 pitches. So I would think Will Walsh is out and Jackson Brockett is in, but I could be wrong. So those are your three pitchers I'm thinking are going to pitch. As far as hitters, Josh Caron, hitting 308, catcher. He's up for the Buster Posey Award. Real solid behind the plate, good framer, good pop time, throws runners out. He's got 8 home runs and 48 RBIs. He leads the team in total bases with 96. When you look at this lineup, nobody has double-digit home runs, but there's 13 guys with home runs. So it's up and down the lineup. Everybody's doing a little, right? It's like Cliff from Cheers, right? I know a little about everything. I know a lot about nothing. So it's like nobody is going way above par, but everybody's kind of right at that par level.
I saw it as death by 1,000 paper cuts.
Yeah.
No one's going to go yard all that often. They're just going to keep hitting singles and singles and singles and singles and
but
singles.
They're not playing the Purdue, you know, Little League crap. Like, no. They're just hitting, yep. You know? Yeah, it was wild when I was looking at it. Riley Silva is their base stealer, though. He's 29 out of 32 on the base paths, so he's got wheels. But again, even him, he's only hitting 282. So, you know, and Dylan Carey's hitting 265. He's got 13 doubles. And 5 home runs. The stats don't wow you. You know what wows you? The 30 wins. The 16-6 home record. You know, this is a good baseball team. You know, it's just the way it is, right? Like, even if you look at, I guess, this past World Series, right, with Rangers and D-backs. Like, who are the wow me guys? But they played for the World Series, and there was a champion. So there's not that many Wyoming guys on this squad, but they're 30-16 and 16-6, and they cannot be taken lightly, obviously. They're the top of the conference. We got to do what we got to do to beat them. I'm just going over if there's anything else here that I put down. I mean, that's pretty much it I got for the preview. We want to, you know, if you're out there, make some noise. You're going to be outnumbered. This is a rabid fan base. The rabbit on Twitter, the rabbit on Reddit. There's like a whole Nebraska baseball Reddit thing. I don't think too many teams outside the SEC have one of those, but they do. So that's good fans. I mean, I like it. For family players, or if some fans are going out there, you're all going to be outnumbered. But why not? Get some of you clap, clap going on out there like you did Purdue. Why not? Let's see. Cass is going to give us the preview for Louisville. And that's what, Wednesday night, Cass?
Well, so this will be the midweek after Nebraska.
Yeah, is that Wednesday or Tuesday?
It's Tuesday.
Tuesday, my fault. So it's Tuesday just weird following doing Nebraska will be Louisville.
Yes. It's just very weird doing this before the midweek before Nebraska.
Yes.
We're a little out of order here, and it's throwing me off.
But when you win the series at Purdue for the first time since 2002 – and you come back and they choke it like that, you do the pot early.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And so Louisville, we're still a little ways out from Louisville, a little over a week. But at the moment, and they will have a midweek this week and a series on the weekend as well. So these numbers will be different by the time we play them. But Louisville's sitting at 29-18 overall. 13-11 in the ACC, and at home they are 22-10. And as we heard earlier, they are 57 in the RPI, so they're just barely above where IU is in the RPI standings. With this being a midweek, the pitching is kind of up in the air because they throw about as many pitchers in the midweek as IU does. So trying to pinpoint who exactly that's going to be is a little rough. And in fact, looking back the last about month or so of midweeks, they don't have any, I don't think they've had anybody throw more than 2 innings at a time. The most common opener over that stretch was Colton Hartman. And he's opened three times and he's gone about an inning each time, to give some perspective there. He's got a 5.09 ERA with a 1.26 whip in 23 innings of work. The other possibility, the other person who opened was Justin West at a 4.32 ERA, a 1.44 whip in 16 and two-thirds innings of work. He does have a 3.19 batting average against, so he is giving up some hits, but overall not letting them score too often. As a whole, the staff is sitting at a 6.27 ERA with a 1.55 whip. They have struck out 429 batters. They've also given up 69 home runs, which is still not quite where IU is,
Nice.
but they, yes. I couldn't pass that up, both from the statistical perspective of, hey, they have given up a lot of home runs, and hey, 69 is a fun number.
Nice.
And their batting average against is sitting at 279. But again, I would expect to see possibly nine pitchers. So take any of this with a grain of salt. It's a bullpen day. With the bats, they've got eight who are hitting at or above 300, led by Zion Rose at 382 with a 1039 OPS. And he is 8 for 11 on stolen bases. This is, again, I feel like I've said this a lot over the last few weeks. This is a team that likes to run and runs well. They have stolen 100 bases in 121 attempts. Going back to Chris, you mentioned about Nebraska running a lot. They're actually top in the Big Ten at stolen bases. Rutgers is second and Purdue is fourth. So this team is facing a lot of speedy running teams in the la over the last month or so. So that's a repeat here with Louisville. They run often and successfully, usually. Their big speedy guys to watch for are JT Benson, who's got a 417 on base percentage, and he has stolen 31 of 35 bases. And then Lucas Moore, who's got a 441 on base percentage, he's stolen 17 out of 20. They've got some guys who are very speedy. On the power side, they've got a trio of guys, Gavin Killen, who's hitting 346, Isaac Humphrey at 333, and Ryan McCoy at 326. They have 8, 8, and 9 home runs respectively, which is not a ton, but that's where most of their power is coming from. This team is hitting 320 on the season, so they're hitting well. And Feeney, you're gonna like this one. They have also hit 69 home runs.
Nice.
So they are hitting home runs at a pretty good pace
Ooh.
as well as a team. No one, again, kind of the no one has a whole bunch, but kind of everybody has at least a couple. This game, as we said, is Tuesday, but is the next Tuesday, May 14th, 6 p.m. Eastern. It is on ACC Network Extra, which is not like BTN Plus. You don't need a separate subscription. If you have ACC Network through whatever TV service provider you have, you should be able to go to the ESPN app and watch through there. The watch ESPN, not the ESPN Plus. So as long as you've got, and I just looked at mine now, and it looks like, in my case, I have Hulu and I have ACC Network. It looks like I will have ACC Network Extra. So you should be able to catch video if you've got a TV service provider. But I always say it, mute the TV and listen to Render on the radio. He is phenomenal, and I highly recommend doing that. So that's what we've got for Louisville next week. But Carl, you're going to touch on tomorrow's last midweek home opponent, Cincinnati.
Yes. First, what I will do is simply replay what I said in last week's show. Cincinnati has been competitive in its first year as a Power 5 school in the Big 12 Conference. The Bearcats are 11 and 10 in league play, 25 and 20 overall. They are a bit better than IU with a 6-4 record in midweek action so far this season. What they've done is, unlike IU, they've beaten the teams they should. They've struggled against teams like Ohio State, who they lost to last week. Offensively, they're led by Josh Cross and Tommy O'Connor, who both have at least a dozen home runs and OPS north of 1,000. Cal Sepsic's older brother Luke is on this team. He's a starter hitting .319 for the year with a .413 on base percentage. He drew three walks and scored a run against Ohio State in that game last week. Also in that game, Bearcat pitching was split up among seven pitchers, with the first four all getting beat up for multiple earned runs. So Indiana's going to have to try to replicate what the Buckeyes managed to do and just hit really well up and down the lineup and against all of these different staff arms that they may throw at them. All right. Now that you've heard my preview from last week, I will now correct a glaring oversight, which is that former Hoosier star Hunter Jesse also starts for this Cincinnati team. And they are coming off a big series win against West Virginia in Cincinnati. I watched West Virginia take batting practice. I was next door for another event. Jesse is hitting .248 on the year, and he's got three home runs. And he was definitely part of one of their big offensive runs against West Virginia this past week. So we will be welcoming Hunter Jesse back to the BART tomorrow. Weather approving, we'll see here. All right. Well, now we will move on to our weekly pick'ems. So let me grab that real quick and pull up where we are. And I'm going to remember now to do this from the correct listings.
Paul showed me a series win last time.
Yeah. All right. So last week was more successful than the week before. Josh, Zach, and Cass were all 4-1 on the week. Chris and I were 3-2 on the week, so that makes Josh still in the lead at 24-10. Zach is a series behind at 23-11. I wrote that wrong. Chris is now three series behind at 20-14. So it's really now kind of looking like it's a two person race at the top between Josh and Zach. Not that Chris can't make it up, but it's that's a long shot.
It's gonna take some Big Ten chaos.
Yeah,
it's been like that all year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's fair.
Chris though is only one ahead of Cass for third place. Cass is in fourth with 19-15. And I'm going to toot my own horn. Yes, I'm in fifth place, but I am at 500 now. I am at 17-17.
Nice.
So at this point, that's all I care about. I just want my head above water at this point. I'm not even really concerned about catching Cass because I'm two series behind Cass, which is a little tough when there is only 10 more left to play. So this week, we have got Rutgers traveling to Penn State. That's a fascinating series, actually. Purdue is traveling to Michigan. So two teams in this title race. Michigan is on the outside of this, but they are at home. Northwestern is traveling to Ohio State. So Ohio State is trying to get themselves into the Big Ten tournament at this point. And Northwestern is just apparently trying to, I mean, obviously they're just trying to finish their season strong. They're not going to be doing anything after the season. Big series, Iowa, only a game and a half back, is going to the Big Ten leader, Illinois. And Iowa has been turning things around. They've been playing really well, so that's going to be a huge series. And then Michigan State and Minnesota. Michigan State's another one of those teams that's trying to, and Minnesota's could make a charge and get into the Big Ten tournament. They're not completely out of it yet. So we've got five really good series in addition to the marquee series, which of course is Indiana, Nebraska, but we will not be picking that one. I don't have everyone else's picks yet because we've gone so early. I will, let's see here. Let's go with Cass first. Cass, what are your picks?
Okay. Well, I'm going I think this first one's a toss up, but I'm going to go Rutgers over Penn State, even though it's at Penn State. And then the second one, Purdue at Michigan, was equally tough because I think both of those teams are going to come out pissed because they both lost the in-state rivalry series this last week. So I think they're both gonna be pissed and have something to prove. And I'm gonna lean for Purdue here. I'm gonna lean with the away team again. I think it's Ohio State over Northwestern. And then I'm going Illinois over Iowa. I'm giving them the home field advantage there. And I'm going to go Minnesota over Michigan State because I don't know that Michigan State's going to hit Wheat Griff, and that's one game right there. So I'm going to lean Minnesota on that one. So Rutgers, Purdue, Ohio State, Illinois, Minnesota.
Okay. I'm going to go next. I'm going to say Penn State is going to defend their home field. Again, I'm going to go with the home team, Michigan over Purdue. I think there's going to be some lingering effects that Purdue's going to have for how, not just that they lost, it's how they
How they
lost.
lost.
That's called scar tissue, Carl. Scar tissue.
I got Ohio State against Northwestern. I think Iowa is on a tear, and I think they're going to take two out of three against Illinois. I think they're going to go in and get two out of three on a road series. And I like Cass's logic in that. So I think Minnesota again will. I think Minnesota will. Even though Michigan State just beat Michigan, I think again two out of three. I think Minnesota does take that one. Chris, what do you have?
All right, as always, my picks are more about hearing about the HoosierTicketProject.org. This project is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that wants to remove the financial barriers preventing fans from attending IU athletics games. It's simple, right? If you can't go, you call them and they can help you possibly go. If you got extra tickets and you can't use them, you call them, they take them, they hand them to the other guys. It's really not that, complicated a system, but no one was doing it. So really, it's like a brilliant thing. Like it's like that little thing in the pizza box that keeps the thing from getting on the pizza. Like, it's a little thing. No one ever thought of it, but then once they thought of it was a very good idea. So it's a very good idea, this Hoosier Ticket Project, but it's not complicated, is my point. The Hoosier Ticket Project provides tickets to individuals and families and helps the athletics department increase attendance. So it's like a win-win, right? Because you got more people at the games if you do this. And it gives Hoosier student athletes the best home crowd environment possible. The project was founded by a group of loyal Hoosier fans. One of them, we know, she actually took pictures, Amanda Pavelka. She took photos for us in the summer league, college league at the Vic once. It's a way of giving back to the university that has given so much to them. So as we come off a graduation weekend and we welcome a whole bunch of new graduates, I'm not an IU graduate, I'm an IU fan, but we welcome them anyway, the IU graduates into the world, they could start giving some tickets back and getting some people to the games. Okay. Hopefully a lot of fans get to the Michigan series. We have Friday's fireworks night, Saturday's senior day, I guess day, because I think it's like a 2 o'clock game. It's gonna be a lot of fun. And we get to kick Tracy Smith's ass. I mean, is there a better day than that? Oh, and Josh Fegley, another traitor. We get to beat him too. So please, HoosierTicketProject.org, get the people there. And if you want to go and you can't otherwise afford it, give them a call. Give them a little search engine. Do what you got to do to contact them. My picks are going to be Rutgers, Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, and Sparty.
All right. Well, I think we covered a lot of ground in this one. Yeah, it looks like we actually hit an hour. So now it is time to move along. We've got
Wait, Carl. There's like maybe like, I don't know, 8% left of this podcast left for us to screw it up. Oh, no, we wouldn't do that.
Of course, you had to find a way to get that in there. Okay.
I had to.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more information on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Chris Feeney and Cassidy Palmer, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.